Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here. Hey, everybody. Welcome. This is Lisa, and I'm here with...
It's your girl, Tawny.
Today, we wanted to talk about a subject that I've been thinking about a lot, and specifically, it is asking for help. And asking for help is something that, keeps so many people from coming into recovery and getting sober in their own way, because I think it's still thought of sometimes, or in some situations by some people, as a form of kind of weakness or a lack of, you know, being able to power through a tough situation, or that, you know, there can sometimes, in a lot of circumstances, be shame around asking for help. And I wanted to talk about it in that, like, what I've learned after asking for help to get sober, which certainly would never have happened if I hadn't asked for help, is that I'm still not so great at asking for help in the other things that go on in my life and in other aspects of that. And, it doesn't just end at, with the decision and then taking the actions to stop using alcohol or drugs or whatever kind of behavior or whatever it is. But it's really like sort of, I noticed for a while in my daily life, just something as silly as, before when we were still all traveling, I would frequently have a heavy overhead bag, and I would struggle and struggle trying to get that bag into the overhead bin when there would be, someone standing next to me, in front of me, whatever, who was clearly waiting for me to get that stupid bag up so they can move to the back of their seat. And instead of just turning to them and saying, hey, do you mind giving me a hand, or do you mind pushing this? I will literally wait for them to say, can I help you with that? In a really, really kind of annoyed tone. And, I have realized that in asking for help, I am not just sort of helping myself. I'm helping others as well, for a whole host of reasons. Most clearly, for me, is in the context of having a sponsee in recovery, or more than one sponsee, as I have right now, and I feel like I'm wanting them to reach out to me more than maybe they feel comfortable, or maybe they necessarily, want to. And I just keep trying to say, you don't have to, go through your day alone. I'm here. Just ask for help. And when they ask for help from me and ask my advice on something or want to talk through a situation, it helps my day so much. Like, I have a better day when I'm able to do that. And we've talked recently about things like if we're taking some sort of prescription medication that is necessary for one reason or another, asking for help and having someone maybe hold on to that medication. But anything, like asking for help when I'm going to have, when in the past, when I'd be having people over and they'd be like, what can I bring? What can I, whatever? I'd be like, no, I got it. Like, why? So I wanted to hear Tawny's thoughts on asking for help versus feeling like you have to do everything on your own.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a good topic. I'm glad you brought it up. And what you said at the beginning is spot on with, we have it in our heads that asking for help, whether it's lifting a piece of luggage or admitting you have a drinking problem, it means weakness. Like, it means something's wrong with you if you need help. And that couldn't be further from the truth. If anything, I think it represents strength. I think it shows self-awareness. I think it shows personal growth to be able to say, I don't know how to do this. Can you help? And, you know, if someone, like you said, if a sponsee reaches out to you, you're not thinking, wow, what an idiot for this person. I can't believe they need help with this.
What a stupid question.
Yeah. Like if someone asks you for help, no one would ever think you were an idiot for not knowing how to do something or saying, or needing help with something. Like,
yeah.
So why, you know, logically, why would we think that we would look weak or stupid because we need help? And this makes sense logically, but in the moment, it's still very, at least for me, it was my inability to ask for help was so ego, tied to my ego.
Yeah.
And
it was, oh, okay. Yeah.
Like it was partially because I wanted to be, you know, in my family, I've always had to be like the strong one.
Yeah.
And so that led to me not crying and not dealing with things and being the rock for other people and not knowing when it was okay for me to say, hey, I need help with something. And sobriety's definitely helped me get more in touch with that. But I wanted to touch on how you said getting help for yourself actually helps other people. And
yes.
I love that you said that, because that's actually what came up for me when you said you wanted to talk about this topic. You know, it took me, I was almost a year sober before I got any sort of help. Like I did it on my own. I was my sobriety was a social experiment. It was just supposed to be a year without alcohol and I was going to blog about it. I didn't know that I needed help. And even on some level, I probably did, but I was just like, my story is different. I'm not like you.
Yeah.
But you know, it took me almost a year to find a therapist and then almost 2 years to find a support group that worked, that I liked. So, and I bring that up because until I found people that are actually like a therapist who was trained professionally to help with this, and then a support group that is built of other people that are like me, my friends and family became my default, and it was unfair to them. It, mm-hmm. you know,
well,
it,
they weren't equipped.
They're not exactly. They're not equipped to handle that. You know, it put a strain on my relationship with my roommate, on my relationship with my friends, because they had to be my support group and my therapist and my helping hand, because I wasn't getting it from where I needed to get it.
Yeah, that is a huge point. Oh my God, that's so right. Because that also goes to the point of you know, not just knowing when to ask for help, but you know, thinking about where to go to ask for the right help in the right situation. It's so funny that we've totally somewhat different takes on this, because you mentioned that the reason, like, I'll just, because it's an easy one and it could apply to anything. It could apply to something with school. It could apply to something at work. It could apply whatever, but just to keep it basic, like the overhead bin. Example, like to me, I would never, like you're saying, like with ego, like you would feel like, no, this is, I must do this on my own because I have to do everything on my own and I'm perfectly capable. Like you had to tell yourself the story that was right, that you did it on your own, right? To keep doing that. And this is mine to bear. So I'm putting it up there. And for me, it was very much like, and it is still often, I don't want to bother anybody, right? Yeah. I don't want to be like, it's me being like my own, like, well, I'm not worthy of help. I'm not worthy, you know, I don't deserve to be able to ask this person next to me to give me a hand getting that bag in the bin. Or this person is coming to my apartment or my house for dinner and I should just be grateful they want to come hang out with me. I'm certainly not going to ask them to like bring a dessert, you know, like I don't want to impose on anybody. I want to, you know, I should be doing everything because I don't want to, you know, upset, or I don't want to potentially drive somebody away because I'm not doing, you know, every single thing. Does that make sense?
No, like the difference? It really does. And but I think it's like, it's still connected because it's like,
yeah,
you not asking for help with your luggage is directly impacting everyone behind you.
Right.
And, you know, me not asking for help from a mental health professional or a peer support group directly impacted my inner circle.
Yep.
And it's like, so how, you know,
so true. Yeah.
How are you showing up? Like, how is you not asking for help impacting how you show up? How are you as a partner? You know, how are you as a daughter? How are you as a sister? Because you're too prideful to say, can you just help? Can you help me with this? Or, you know, saying you need help also, it doesn't mean fix this problem. It just means, you know, maybe I need to bounce some ideas off of someone, or I'm struggling with this. Do you know where I could find some resources? You know, you're not asking for someone to take on this burden. It's just, here's a thing I'm struggling with. Do you have any insight?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a way, it reverts back to, for me, like when I was first practicing law, you know, I was at this like giant firm, and it was a very intense place. And everybody, all of us junior associates in my first year class of lawyers starting at the firm, there were 90 of us. And we were all, you know, terrified of everybody more senior, and certainly of the partners. And we would all be in the same predicament where you would go sit in a partner's office, and a partner would be giving you an assignment, and he or she would be saying like, oh, and here's the fact pattern. This is what we need to look for. Are there any, you know, precedents in this, or how has this been done? And we'd be sitting there furiously taking notes, but like thinking, walking out of that office going, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to be doing. You know, I don't know, like, what is this that I'm supposed to find? And then we'd all be like whispering around to each other. And there was one guy, he was a fifth year associate at the time. And he just knew everything, and like where to find everything, and what people were, you know, when we didn't understand what they were looking for, like he would tell us whatever. We called him the library. And we would go to this guy a lot. But other than that, like, and then what would happen would be that somebody would get that assignment from the partner, not really understand it, go spend like 30 hours on it, write some big memo or do whatever they were doing, and come back, hand it in, and it was exactly not what the partner was looking for. You know what I mean? And then the partner would go nuts, and then, you know, you would have to go back to the drummer to like the idea. And then that was 100 times worse than if, you know, we had gone back to the partner and said, hey, can you just explain this a little bit more for me, or gone to the library and said right away, you know, because we, in it affecting other people, like, like we would spin our wheels, and then we would end up with something that was not what the other person needed. So, you know, we learn pretty quickly that the smart people and the successful people were the ones that in the moment would ask for help. Like when a partner was talking about blah, 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 maybe say like, can I just ask a quick question? Sorry, can I stop there and ask a quick question? You know, they knew that we were just out of law school. Like, come on. And I see it, you know, in young lawyers frequently. It's that feeling of, I should know everything. I should be everything. I'm here. I should never have to ask for help. And it's bad for your career too.
It really is. And that your story reminds me of an episode of The Office that I just watched, where Charles asks Jim, like, hey, can you get, Charles is like, hey, can you give me a rundown? And Jim's like, yep, coming right up. And Jim has no idea what a rundown is. He's like asking other people in the office, what is a rundown? Like, what, I don't know what he's talking about. And everyone was like, well, why didn't you just ask him what it meant? And it just turned into like his whole day was spent trying to figure out what a rundown was when he could have just asked what it is. But you know, and your point is making me realize how deep this goes back for me, of like being in school and not wanting to ask a question, not wanting to raise my hand and ask a question because I was afraid of looking stupid.
Right.
And like,
right.
No matter what the class was or what the subject was, if I was not clear on something, I didn't want to raise my hand.
Right. Yes. And that, yes.
And I still, you know, I carry that somewhat to this day. You know, I'm no longer, quote, in school, but I, you know, I take a lot of classes. Yeah. And there's times when if someone uses a word that I don't know, or they're talking about something I'm not familiar with, I just nod along and pretend like I know. But I,
yeah,
it could be just an easier conversation if you just say, wait, what does that word mean? And no one's going to think you're stupid.
No. And I mean, you have like a tremendous amount of intellectual curiosity, which I always think is awesome. You know, you're always interested in learning about what you might not, you know, what you feel like you might not know about or something. And for you to feel that way, you know, I think there's also a gender component as women. Yeah.
You're right.
And I think that, you know, I'm sure a lot of men like don't ask for help because they feel, you know, that they shouldn't have to or something like that. But like with women also, we feel like, you know, maybe their imposter syndrome comes mm-hmm. into play. If I ask this question, then they're all going to know I'm a fraud. That affects men as well. You know, then everybody's going to know I'm a fraud and I'm going to get booted out of here. And, you know, in the long run, it's like that thing with Jim, like you waste, you can waste your day in spin rules and it doesn't, you know, you would have gotten like to the right answer and in a way that also, you know, achieved the objective of like doing a good job for the boss or whatever it is. If you had asked for that help. I think during the pandemic, I think, you know, as we all know, we see the numbers. It's like there's a big, there's going to be, you know, who knows how the winter's going to go. It's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. That we know it's going to be tough. And it is going to be more imperative than ever to ask for help with things that, you know, we might have not asked for help for in the past, for sure.
Exactly. And, you know, the internet is so value neutral. It's not good. It's not bad. It just kind of is. But a good thing about it is that we are in the information age and there's so many resources where, you know, now is there's a lot more people that are seeking, that are going to support groups for recovery or for, you know, a bunch of things, because you can do it on the couch. You can do it with your camera off.
Right.
And you can just listen, you know, you don't have to, you know, that awkward feeling of like driving or walking to a support group. And then you're like, oh my God, if I go in there, this means I have a problem. And, you know, you make it mean so much more, but you can, you know, you can pique that curiosity just by sitting on your couch now. And I think that's so valuable.
Yeah.
With technology and in the pandemic and you know, approaching the holidays or, you know, the new year and all of these uncharted territories in sobriety too, you know?
Like,
And there's tons of resources out there for us to get help.
Yeah. Yeah, there definitely are. And there are also going to be new and different ways, I think, that people will need help. You know, like I think about, you know, just how people are dealing with, you know, the challenges that arise because they've got their kids at home, you know, for school.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who have been caretakers for maybe an older parent or someone else, and maybe they're going to need a hand because there's that much more on their plate at home, like getting meals to the door for someone or whatever it is, you know, doing whatever kind of errands that somebody else might not be able to do for themselves. And, you know, and I think that we all need to be in this kind of mind space where there is a more cohesive feeling of like, this is something that we're all experiencing mm-hmm. together. I know we talked about this on our discussion of the holidays about how, you know, like it can feel like so lonely, like we're the only one going through having our Thanksgiving ruined and not being able to go see our family for Christmas, but everybody is impacted by this. There's no one who's not impacted in some way. And I think keeping that in mind and then being of when we think about, we've talked about this before with service, like, how can I help? What can I do? Like, you know, but it also, I think we need to start asking ourselves, what do I need help with? What might, you know, what might be better if I ask for a little help here?
Yeah, that's like we were saying at the beginning of the episode, in order to ask for help, you have to have this level of self-awareness of knowing.
Yes.
You have to be. It's like it's you have to have this humility of like, I'm struggling with blank. Yeah. And blank would make this easier. You know, you have to know what that is, because
First you have to get to something that you might be in denial about I'm struggling with blank, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when if you're lucky enough to have people that say, hey, is there anything I can do to help? Those are the things that you can do. If like you said, if it's something simple like, I'm not able to cook this week. Is there any way you could drop off a lasagna? You know, some like I would be happy to do that for somebody.
Of course. Like,
but I don't know that that's what you need until you tell me that that's
what you need. That's right. Nobody can help you if they don't know what's going on. That's like, because I can totally be one of those, like, as I'm standing there like an idiot trying to shove this bag in the over and trying to lift it, I can sit there and go, I'm not going to ask somebody to help me. And at the same time go, I can't believe no one's helping me. Yeah. Like, I can have both those thoughts at the same time.
Like, why aren't they reading my mind?
Right. Why aren't they just automatically doing this? And, you know, I think there's just going to be all kinds of stuff that we need to, you know, it's part of, I think, one way to for us to be able to help identify when things come up that we might need help with or how to see that in ourselves is, you know, we've talked about sometimes and this winter, I think it's going to be a really important time to do this is to sort of like in the morning every day, I kind of, when I wake up, well, first I look up at the sky, at the universe and say, thank you, because it will never get old for me just saying thank you and feeling grateful that I wake up sober. But then I do, sort of do a check on myself on how am I feeling, like everything, how's my head today? How's my body feeling? Like, how am I doing? And it's been in those moments that I can identify, okay, I think something's off and I think this might be where it's coming from. And that can, you know, that can produce, you know, an ability to at least recognize that something's up and then the ability to sort of ask for help if I need it. It was an interesting, I heard a guy on one of the things that on a program that I was speaking on, he was on and he talked about like every day, like checking your, what they call it, he's in the UK, checking your quote unquote form. Right. So you wake up and sort of do a head to toe, like, what's my form today? Today I'm a out of 10. Today I'm a, you know, 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10. Maybe you wake up one day and you're like, my form, my whole being, head, body, everything, I'm more like a 4 or 5 today. Maybe I need to, you know, get some rest or ask for some help or do something different today than I thought I was going to do today because I'm not in that right space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like that idea of checking your form because that's something you can check in with several times a day because it's going to change throughout the day.
Exactly. Yes. It's totally a moving target. And that's another thing that you hear in the rooms a lot, which is like you can start your day over at any time. And that's true. Like just because I wake up as a 3 or 4 because I'm really grouchy because I didn't like something, you know, that happened, I'm mad at somebody or whatever it is, doesn't mean I have to spend my entire day as a 3 or 4.
You know, that reminds me, I have a friend who thinks of their day in the form of quarters where it's like, all right, Q1 sucked. But, you know, for Q2, I'm going to make Q2 better by doing XYZ. And I think about that sometimes because it is. It's like you can give yourself this reset a couple times always, a day, however many, you know, however many resets you need. If maybe you need more than four, but like, I like that idea of saying, you know, it's like that metaphor of like, just like if you drop your phone or what is it like if your screen is cracked, so you might as well just break your whole phone or something like that.
Oh, it's yeah, like, yeah,
no,
yeah.
It just means you need a new screen cover. You like your phone still works. So it's like, I feel like we can do that with our days where it's like, well, the first couple hours I was completely worthless and angry. So my whole day is just shot. And like, no, it doesn't have to be like that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I have always sort of historically found that tough to put into practice, you know, of thinking of it that day. Like I can do like, maybe I'll feel better if I do this or that. And maybe I do feel better if I do it. But usually I do. But putting it into quarters, I really like. Mm-hmm. And when you first said that, it kind of scared me because when I was practicing law, we had to, we build our clients in 10-minute increments. So it was in 6-minute increments. So you had to bill your, like you had to keep track of your time. So if I worked on something for 20 minutes, that was like, you know, 0.2 at, no, I'm getting the math all screwed up. I'm so bad with math.
I get the gist.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was in 6-minute increments. So yeah, if I worked on something for 24 minutes, I would put down 0.4 hours. And it was excruciating to live your life that way. You know, we all had our running things where we were keeping track because you had to be very precise. You know, I billed the client 3.2 hours on this project today. And so the idea of breaking it into quarters and timing immediately made me like shrink back. But now that I'm thinking about it, you know, part of that is letting go and saying, yeah, but that's not about anymore for me. That's not about charging time to a client. That's about how I can take care of myself during the day. So let's have a rational thought process on that. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Good. I'll thank my friend Megan for telling me about it.
Okay. Do you have a favorite music thing on Change? There's always the obvious.
I mean, this whole episode I've been thinking of Help by the Beatles.
Yeah.
But then when you said Change, now I'm thinking of Change Would Do You Good by Sheryl Crow.
A Change Could Do You Good. I love that song. Yes. I love Sheryl Crow.
I do too. Remember I got to see Sheryl? I saw her at Lilith Fair.
Oh, wow. Was she great? She must have been great.
Of course. That's honestly, the fact that I was able to go to Lilith Fair, I think was like one of the most impactful moments of my feminist awakening that took probably another 15 years after. But even still, I think those was like, that was planting the seeds going to.
I think many people found that from Lilith.
It was really powerful. I mean, I went to, this is when I was living in Northern California. And I went to Lilith Fair with, if you're listening and you don't know what it is, it was the first women only music festival and put on by Sarah McLachlan. And I went with my lesbian aunt and her girlfriend. So it was this very, you know, pro LGBT, pro girl power, pro women's rights experience. And I was like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10. I don't really remember, but like, It was so impactful.
Yeah. That is very cool. When I think about Sheryl Crow, I always wonder, like, she went from Eric Clapton to Lance Armstrong. And that's like a pretty serious swing there.
It is.
Yeah. I'd stay with Clapton.
You would?
Oh my God, Clapton? Absolutely.
I mean that he was her favorite mistake.
Yes, I love that song. I have my own favorite mistake. Do you have yours?
Oh, man.
Can you single out one? I can single out one.
You know, I feel like it's like a decade.
Oh, I'm thinking in terms of men.
Yeah, yeah. Same.
Oh! Oh my God, that's so great. That's so great.
I know. Maybe, like, how cool would it be if we could hang out with Sheryl Crow one day?
I know that would be great.
I think she would like
us. You know, it's actually, I will just say this, and I know we got to wrap up, but, you know, Clapton has, he started this rehab place, detox rehab in Anguilla.
Oh, really?
It's called Crossroads.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's his thing. And like, one of the things that is amazing that they have at Crossroads, first of all, if I had to go to detox rehab again, I would definitely want to go to Crossroads if it was something my insurance covered. But they have this thing that I have thought about, and I've actually called them and spoken to them about it at times when I thought I could do it. It's a week-long recovery recharge where you go, you're sober. It's for sober people who want to go down there and spend a week in Anguilla and at, you know, this like, and have basically kind of like a sober retreat. And you can go to the 12-step meetings. There's all kinds of like, you know, meditation and yoga and blah, blah. It's all that kind of stuff. It's almost like a spa thing without the spa. You know what I mean? It's not, it's like a mental spa. A recovery spa. And you can do that's, and it's not that expensive, or as expensive as I thought it would be. It's expensive, but not as I thought it would be, because it's pretty bare bones. You're going there to be in a beautiful place and be sober and be have access to like a lot of recovery related stuff.
Let's do it. Let's go, Lisa.
I'm in. All right. Well, that's it for today. And thank you for listening. Ask for help. We're going to ask for help. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.